Hey everybody, this is Stu Smith with another Two Through and After, and I'm so excited today because we have Will Chesney here, who is former SEAL, and he has a new book out that is all about his dog, Cairo. And we're going to get into that incredible story, but first we're going to hear about his journey into, you know, a normal kid in Texas to becoming a Navy SEAL, becoming a dog handler at the highest levels of special warfare. And then we'll talk about what he's doing now. So that is how Two Through and After works, Will. And thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. It's good to see you.
Oh, man, thanks so much. So who were you, Will, when you were a kid? What was growing up in Texas like? I guess East Texas, is that what I read, near Beaumont?
Southeast Texas, yeah. Right on Houston, near Beaumont. Nothing too special, being from Texas. I played football, of course.
Yeah.
Didn't have a swim team. Yeah. Didn't have a swim team, didn't have a wrestling team, but I definitely wish I would have gotten to both those activities for sure.
Right.
And then nothing too crazy. We were a little bit poor, grew up in a trailer park. Not too bad, but I had to work. So I ended up not playing football sometimes and getting a job.
Right.
Working.
So there what was your first job?
First job. I think it was like washing dishes at a restaurant or mowing the lawn somewhere. It was one of those two.
Yeah, I did a lot of landscaping.
You know, your basic kid job, washing.
Yeah.
A lot of landscaping for the school district.
Yeah.
And then I think before then, though, I was washing dishes. Yeah. But nothing too crazy. There wasn't much to do around. I didn't want to go to – there wasn't much to do around that area.
Right.
Or this – yeah. And I didn't want to go to college.
Just didn't so tell me this. Really, so you're one of the few people who can get to BUDS at a young age and actually graduate. So you joined the Navy right after high school, correct?
Yeah, I signed up when I was 17. So my parents had to sign the early waiver.
And wow, then, so you're still a senior in high school when you signed up.
Yeah, I was. Figured might as well. I had my, you know, I wanted to be a SEAL since maybe middle school.
Okay.
Maybe early high school. Yeah.
All right, and so now this was, this was a special time, as I recall, right? I mean, your senior year, pretty big event occurred.
Yeah, I remember watching the towers fall in the library. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the motivation
to serve probably tripled at that point.
Yeah, definitely, obviously.
You're a young high school kid with some athletic history, some work experience in there. So you know what hard day's work is. You know what, you know, some training is. How are you training yourself to prepare for BUDS?
They showed me a couple different things. I actually got fired from one of my jobs, like mowing and doing lawn maintenance for one of the for the school district. So, got basically mowing and weeding or spraying Roundup everywhere. Just lost motivation. It just wasn't a job I loved doing, and I was like, I don't know, it wasn't growing. For some reason, I just started half-assing the job. I got fired. Showed me like, hey, I definitely could. It was my fault, and I could have made that job better. I could have just done it well and try to enjoy myself being there, but you know, kind of just opened my eyes to some things. But before I left for the Navy, I worked with my dad building cell phone tower communication towers.
Okay. I'm pretty popular back then.
Yeah. It was a I hated heights. Terrible. But it was
I'm not
a big heights fan.
Nauseated every time I'd get up high in a plane or jump out or, you know, even the cargo net, you just give me the oof.
Yeah, no, I don't love heights. So I was like, well, this would be a good way to work with my dad. It paid well because the job is a little bit more dangerous. And I could test myself to see if I would suck it up.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. But it was good. It was interesting working with my father.
Sure. Yeah.
They called him Spider-Man. He didn't really have any fear of heights, and he would just stand on top of the towers, not clipped into anything. And it was like, come on, man. Hook in somewhere, bro. But he taught me how to trust my equipment. and I got to test myself a little bit, see if I'd climb up the tower, and, you know, I did.
Nice.
Spent some good quality time with my dad. Yeah.
So that's good. So you're learning to, you're learning that there's some challenges ahead of you. So you're taking some action to kind of help prepare yourself for some of those challenges. What was your recruiting experience like? How did that go for you?
There's a couple of good stories in the book that talks about like just some of the hurdles I had to go through. Nothing wrong with the recruiters, but you know, you need to, just because you're signing up for boot camp, I was a 17-year-old kid, you know, I wasn't paying attention. I didn't care. I thought my recruiter was yeah, you got it.
Let's do a lot this. Of people have that problem. You know, they don't read through the lines and also don't know the system yet. You know, there is a system to getting to BUDS.
Well, there's people like you and other people that help get through the workouts and just like, trust your, or don't trust your recruiter, do your own research.
Yes. Well. Very good.
I guess I did pretty well on my ASVAB, so they asked me to go to IT school, information technologist, maybe.
Sure.
Right. But that and submarines would give me $5,000. I was like, oh, I used to be pretty smart. I feel like I was a pretty smart kid. $5,000, I get to learn something new and go check it out. Like, she knew from day one, like, I'm just here to be a SEAL, but I'll go do this other school and make $5,000. But when I showed up to boot camp, submariner chief, he's like, hey man, you got submarines in your contract, it disqualifies you from BUDS. I was like, oh man, I was a brand new 17-18-year-old kid by then, maybe. He's a Navy chief, been around for a while.
Sure.
I just showed up and I'm like, hey man, chief, I'm just here to go to BUDS. You know, he was an old submariner. He's like, hey, you know, I guess he probably figured everybody quits, like 80% of guys quit, you know. Like, he figured I'm just some young kid, dreams of going to BUDS. He's like, you're just going to quit anyways, and you'll lose all this. You'll lose a great school, and you'll lose the money, and you'll lose the submarines. And he's like, I'm just going to keep it the way it is. You're going to submarine school. Oh, man. But I was persistent. You got to know what you want.
That is the key word that I tell people all the time. You have to be persistent. And you can drive things your way. Yeah. So what did you do? How did you get out of that one? Because that is a hard one to get out of.
That's what I was there to do. There's nothing else. Like, send me home.
Right.
I don't know exactly the words, but there's like, you find what you would be willing to die for in life. Something you don't have to get paid for. Like, what do you really want to go do? You know, I wanted to be a SEAL. So there was nothing to stop me. I don't know exact words, but like, hey, might as well send me home. I don't know what to do with my hands. I don't know. Like, it's either BUDS or, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with the Navy. It was just like, that's where, if I wanted to be a medic, you know, it would have been straight to that. Or if I wanted to be the straight dog handler, it would have been that. But that was
right.
My
goal. So what did you, back then you had to go to an A school before you went to BUDS. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So 2001, 2002, right?
Yeah.
So what A school did you go to?
Yeah, so they dropped the contract. I lost my bonus, but he gave me Machinist Mate A School. So I stayed in the Great Lakes area. I had some good times in boot camp. It was, you know, not all of it.
But yeah.
I made some pretty good friends and had some pretty good times. It was interesting, you know, leaving the trailer park and going off on an adventure. It was pretty cool, man.
Yeah. Well, so pretty decent experience with boot camp other than the administrative hiccup at the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it's boot camp. There's a lot of sitting around, but we made it fun at some points and made it through. It wasn't crazy long. And then A school.
Now, did you meet up with some other like-minded folks that were heading to BUDS as well?
Definitely.
That you were able
to SWIT guys,
start training with?
SWIT guys. Yep, some BUDS guys. That's what I'm talking about, that group of guys. We just made a small group of guys. I don't think anybody ever became a SEAL, but had a few SWIT friends make it through.
Right.
Yep, but we all worked out together. Around that area, it was good, man. I'd like to get back up there and check out Chicago and go see it again. Yeah,
I'd like to do that too. That would be fun to, especially now with their BUDS prep program, and you know, it's so streamlined now for making SEALs and SWIC guys. You know, it's a good deal. Yeah. They've learned how to do it, and it's so much better than it was. You know, because
it was your book to get ready and then going and trusting your recruiter, right? And then The motivators, the that we used to have the motivators.
Right. Dive motivators.
Dive motivators. That's it.
That's right.
Great.
Right. All right. So you make it through boot camp and A school, starting to prepare yourself, and then you show up at Bud's in Coronado. And how was that? You know, when did you realize that you were going to be in 246, which is a really famous class now.
I showed up.
You know, mainly because of the Only Easy Day picture book. I mean, that's got to be pretty cool to see thousands of pictures of your Bud's classmates, you know, whatever you want.
It's really awesome. At the time, it was different, like, you know, having a camera guy follow us around. But I love Richard. That guy's awesome. If you haven't seen that book,
The Only Easy
Day was yesterday. He has a picture book on our class. It's awesome.
I have it somewhere around here.
He's a great guy. Yeah, I gave mine to my parents or both. Yeah, I got one around here. I got yours around here too somewhere. But that was, so looking back on those pictures, it was cool. The whole experience was awesome, man. Like I said, I grew up in Southeast Texas. I didn't travel too much. Next thing you know, I showed up early. I left the Great Lakes, and I was pretty persistent kid, I guess you can say. I knew what I wanted, and it was like, hey, let's go out to California. I ended up going out there a month early to help out.
Oh, nice.
Like, let's go. Let's spin me up. Yeah.
So before your class even formed up, you were there like extra hands in PTRR or, you know, other phases?
I got to go to the island and check guys out. It was really cool experience. Yeah. Seeing those guys make it all the way through, being around the instructors.
It's funny.
It's always funny.
They are hilarious.
Intimidated.
They are hilarious. And you know what? Yeah. It's probably really healthy for you to see people making it through. You know, because there's something that's really powerful about seeing it.
Oh, definitely.
Believe it. You know, and you're just like, that guy made it. I can make it. I just got to
suck it
up.
All those guys, third phase, definitely. Yeah. Look how much fun we're about to have. If I get to go see third phase and all the cool stuff they're going to do, I'm like, all you got to do is suck it up, buttercup. I'm like, all right. It sucked. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, literally, like, it's what I wanted to do. It's where I wanted to be. But I
went out to the island. Sucked. You got any cool Bud stories that come to mind? That maybe the moment when you realized, all right, I got this, you know, because we all kind of go in there with a little bit of doubt at first, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, something clicks.
The only thing is, like, if you're gonna get hurt, you know the deal. Like, nothing was gonna stop us. The only time that maybe quitting kind of crossed my mind was, like, I tell the story a bit, but the second sleep or third sleep, you know, whatever, the whole week sleep, you get two sleep sessions. So, like, the second sleep, maybe first, second sleep. And so people don't know, hell week's 5.5 days, no sleep. In between, they give you, I think it's an hour or two, twice. So second time, they woke us up all night. So during a breakout in hell week, they wake you up with gunfire, screaming and yelling, your adrenaline's going. No big deal. It's just panic.
Sure.
See who freaks
pure
out.
Adrenaline.
Then, once you've been around for a minute, you're super tired. You're like, 3 days, pure adrenaline. Freak out, dude. See how far that gets you, kind of thing. And then this time, you've been awake for 3 days. Hey, did they just get you up nice and easy? Hey, wake up. You're all dry because you get checked out by medical. Obviously, they're always safe. Safety first.
Yep.
And then your nice dry camis, they wake you up all nice. And they're so friendly. They make you go stand on top of the berm and just wave to the sun. You're just like, oh, you know it's coming. You're about to get in that water and you know it's not warm, and then you're gonna get sandy and your crotch isn't sandy at the second. So you're like, it's nice not having a sandy crotch and then being warm. But anyway, you go out in the surf, we're standing there, and one of the instructors is like, take seats. And nobody, like, I'm pretty sure it was the time, like, nobody in the class listened. The only time it was, like, stood there for a second and like, take seats. We did. Yeah. But that was a good one. I was like, man, you guys are good. I wasn't surprised to hear the bell ringing on that one.
Yeah, I tell you, it's hard to get dry and clean and get wet again. I would say that is a little mental challenge there. And I agree with you. It's not like one of those things that's going to make you.
That's a good one, man. Not, especially
But it definitely makes you like, ooh, that sucks.
No.
I get it every morning at 6 a.m. when I jump in the swimming pool.
Yeah, no, that was a good one.
There's a moment like I don't feel like getting wet for this little swim workout.
You doing the cold plunges?
Not that cold, but it's cold enough.
Oh, no, I got you doing swim work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got you. I try to wake up. I like to start doing cold plunges, cold hot contrast. I think those are good for you.
We'll do it. Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. So okay, you graduate Buds and SQT. Tell me what was the next phase for you? You know, what was your first SEAL team?
What's SEAL Team 4? I didn't know much about all the different teams, really. I remember we were signing out signing up for our wish list sheet, is what they call it, at the end of Buds, like what teams you want to go to. And like, I don't know, East Coast or West Coast, I don't care. Just saw a couple of guys that I got along with in the class. So I went off to the East Coast. I was like, hey, where are you guys going? Some of the guys were on the East Coast. I'm like, all right, cool. And showed up SEAL Team 4, did a couple deployments there.
Nice.
They were very good.
Nice. And then, now, when in your career were you able to start learning how to be a dog handler? And how's that happen? Because I tell you what, I can't tell you how many emails I get with kids.
So the two deployments?
Yeah, they want to be a dog handler. I mean, how does that happen?
Well, I would say if you want to be a SEAL dog handler, I would just focus on becoming a SEAL.
Oh, yes.
Once you become a SEAL, then you make it happen. Just become a SEAL first. Anybody else that wants to become a dog handler, I mean, just it's a.
It's usually an MOS involved, right? You got or a rating or, you know,
mastered arms. We had a bunch of great master. I'm not sure if there's any other ratings. There probably is. I haven't done. All I know is we had a couple of mastered arms work with this development group. Those guys were great.
Great dog.
They went through their own. Yeah, man. I had some of the best times with those guys. Just going through dog handling school and deployments. We were obviously tight because I was a dog handler. Those guys are awesome. They got in firefights as well, and they earned their keep. But yeah, if you want to become just a dog handler, just go Navy recruiter. They'll put you in the MA school. They'll know the route to send you on. Just make sure you double check it.
Right, of course. So you did a couple of deployments with 4, and then you decided you wanted to screen for Dev Group. But how was that process for you?
It was a process. It's like going through Buds all over again. But yeah, I saw my first dog demonstration at SEAL Team 4. I think we put old Josh Morton in a bite suit. I want to say we put him had him run and had a dog tackle him. It's funny because he's now he runs a dog training, K9 tactical in Iowa, I think it is. But yeah, so it's funny to watch him. I think it was him in the bite suit. You get first dog demonstration. He gets tackled, and the whole task unit laughs at him. And says, ah, look at him. But I still didn't realize, like, it was cool to see the capability of the dogs, but it was just a quick thing. And I didn't really realize I'd be a dog handler until I got to development group. And then I really saw the capabilities of the dogs. There's a time in it says it in the book where I remember going in the team room once and someone said, hey, raise your hand if a dog's ever saved your life. And everybody's hand pretty much went up with at least one story. Everybody had a good dog story, if not a few.
Wow.
Yeah. So I loved dogs growing up. I never knew of working dogs, but once I saw that and you got to get a job just because you're a SEAL doesn't mean like, hey man, make yourself good job, dude. Everybody here is a SEAL. Make yourself valuable or go away.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to specialize. Yeah.
You got to specialize and, just do whatever you're drawn towards. Diving, preaching, sniper. I saw dogs. I'd been through a couple other schools. I saw dogs once I got to there. I was like, oh, I started making myself more available to the other dog handlers. And then the team leader just spent more time with them. And the call was made. I'll be going to dog handling school. And I got back.
Nice. So, so you make it through green team, you're at a squadron. And so now you're learning how to be a dog handler. When did you meet Cairo?
Let's go back from that deployment. I was supposed to get a dog that was killed on that deployment. Like right before we came home. So once we returned home, they'd just gotten home. They was a trainer's. They go and purchase the dog somewhere. I was a new handler. We had a couple of MAs as well. So there were SEALs and MAs in this that were all new handlers. The master at arms had been around dogs for a while. So they knew their dog stuff better than they knew their SEAL stuff. And obviously, so it was cool to like, we would teach them SEAL stuff and they would teach us some dog stuff. And we went to, so we returned home from that deployment. They would cycle all the new dogs through all the new handlers, just to, every dog's different. Every person's different. Every, you know, you gotta, we have the trainers there to watch you handle that dog and then see which personalities mesh, who's going to make the best team. Those guys know what they were doing. Or they knew what they were doing. So they, you know, there was a couple of dogs I saw, one's Bronco, one's Cairo. I didn't know what I was talking about. The trainers did. And they're like, hey, you're getting Cairo eventually. I'm like, all right, cool. We left for a great school in California. I think it was 8 or 9 weeks. And just getting to know all the new guys, the master at arms in the group, and building that bond with those guys and the dogs for like 8, 9 weeks alone was great. And I left that school maybe not ready just to deploy, because you still have a lot of work to do, but I left that school with a lot of confidence in my handling skills and a lot of confidence with Cairo.
Nice. Now, what kind of relationship were you able to have with Cairo, you know, as a dog handler? I imagine you get to take them home and, you know, they become your buddy.
Well, it just depends. Like every person's different. Every dog is different. So every person's different. Every dog's different.
Yeah.
These are working dogs. We always treat them accordingly. You know, they're you treat them like a loaded weapon.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've seen the damage these dogs can do, and it's no joke. Literally no joke. Like, they will kill you. Like, if they, their teeth are no joke. They'll nick an artery or something. So you treat them with respect. Some dogs, we say, has the switch. When you put that vest on and it's time to go to work, whether what job it is, explosive odor, man odor, anything, narcotics, put that vest on, they know it's time to work. You don't touch them. When you take that vest off, you turn the switch off, and it's like, you know, if the dog has that capability, just hang out it with the guys or hang out at home. You know, the dogs that we had, you're asking a lot, man. You're asking these dogs to get in a fight with somebody twice their size in a dark, inside of a dark room, and stay in that fight no matter what, around gunfire, explosions, skydiving, rappelling. I mean, these dogs are like the top of the 1% of the 1%, you know. And sometimes they can't turn that off. In order to find that capability, sometimes they just can't turn, just like some people can't quite turn it off. But Cairo could. Yeah. I could take him home. Especially when he got retired, he would be hanging out. I got a picture of him with my buddy's kids, two kids like upside down on the couch in their lap.
Aw.
Even when he was working, I could take him around the command. Yeah, he could turn it off. He had that good personality, but he was a very good worker. All the dogs at the command were good, great workers.
Nice.
But even when he was still working, I'd take him around the command, and the women, guys, he would lean up against you, and he would cover you in his dog hair because he was a leaner. So he leaned up against you, and he had yuck mouth, so he had stinky breath. He had periodontal disease, and he put his hot trash breath in your face, and he'd sit there and pant, cover you in hair, and everybody loved it. Everybody loved it. Even the guys on the team that were allergic to him would, they didn't care. They'd still pet him.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So how many years did you do, as a Navy SEAL?
I was in the Navy 13 years.
13 years?
Through, straight through. Yeah.
And how many years did 11. You have Cairo?
I got him in 2000. I'm going to say 2009, I think it was. So,
okay.
I worked him for a few deployments, and then obviously the big mission. And then I went back to being a shooter, and in the book, it kind of goes through some of my own issues I went through, and then getting him retired. So, you know, we worked together for a few years, and once I did stop working him, he was still in the squadron, so he was still part of the family, and I knew right. The guys were taking care of him. But just because I wasn't handling him, but he was still around, you know.
Right. Now, when he retired,
so I had him for
years. Did he live with you when he retired?
Yeah, we had to put in the paperwork because, like I said, these are working dogs. The people in charge have to make sure the dog is a liability, and anywhere the home it's going to can't be an issue. So I put in the paperwork. As I said, I was going through my whole medical screening. I was going to a lot of appointments. If I was still working as a SEAL, I might not have been able to take him home. You know, too busy. Timing worked out good. the people in charge, I put in the paperwork, they did the evaluation. The handlers usually get first choice. I was Cairo's first handler. It was great to get him home, and they approved me to take him home. It was good for him to be around. I got to take care of him at the end of his days, and it was good for me to have him home as well, because I was going through a pretty rough time. Yeah, no pun intended.
But oh, no.
He got me through some hard stuff, that's for sure. The dogs are a good modality to get you through.
Yeah, I loved what you said. I can't remember where I read you had said this, that you know they just stay in the present. You know, the dogs are just able to stay in the present, and you know, they don't worry about what happened in the past. They don't worry about what's happening in the future. They're just focused in the present. And that's a very powerful skill to learn as a human.
Dude. It does. It reminds me of it. Especially, I learned all kinds of stuff from these dogs. That's definitely one of them. I mean, they don't think about the past, and don't dwell on it. Don't think about the future. Just live right now. Yep.
Right.
And they live off of love, man. So the emotions are another big thing, big saying in the dog world. Your emotions run up and down the leash. I mean, everybody can relate. So if I'm being an ass and being mean to the dog, bad mood, it's going to be terrible training. The dog's going to be like, he can't understand what you're saying, but he understands your emotions. If I'm happy and playful and joyful and clapping, that was hard for me to get through, being around a bunch of teen guys and being like, all kinds of, hey, you're going to make fun of me later, but you have to get that communication across. I don't care what it takes. That dog's going to save your life. Like, I don't care what it takes. If I go and look like an idiot, cool. Because a month from now, if I save one of my teammates' lives, I don't care how much you make fun of me. I don't care. I'll do it with no pants on. You know what I'm saying? That kind of thing. But you have to get – it takes a second to get that and realize that. That was a hard for me to get at first. But, and then you can use that with your family as well.
Oh, sure.
If you wake up grumpy, your kids are going to see it. Your employees are going to see it. Anybody, your family, period. Yeah.
That's a really great point.
Try to keep that in mind.
So tell me this. What made Cairo the dog selected for the Bin Laden raid? What made him so special? Because, obviously this was most important raid of the century. What was special about him that enabled him to be chosen for that mission?
We just returned from a deployment, so we were fresh. Like, we had just been deploying for however many months, and I was at free fall jump master school with my best friend Nick Check at the time. And I'd become just I had handled Cairo back over to the kennel, and I was just a shooter. But somebody on the team just had some, we had stuff like this happen all the time. We were busy all the time. It was just another thing. We didn't know what was going on. They needed a dog handler with a SEAL with experience. And one of the guys, I think, was busy. He had some stuff he was taking care of. Called me home, and I went and grabbed him. He's just like, yeah, I didn't have a life. That was my life. I didn't have a home. That was my family.
Sure.
Cairo was a great dog. I'm not just saying that. We just got back from deployment where he did really well. We knew what we were doing. Yeah, we were just ready to go. We're very fortunate. I could have been easily replaced by any member on that team, and I would say they were definitely better handlers than I were. I was just trying to keep up with them.
Sure.
Cairo was pretty replaceable. We had all good dogs, but Cairo was a real solid dog as well. For sure. He was way more valuable than I'd say I was. I was a lot of great men on that team.
Mm.
Definitely.
Yeah. Incredible. So any great story about Cairo you want to share, whether it's work or play? Love to hear something about Cairo.
Still a funny one.
How was he special to you?
This is Cairo. This is a little Cairo. I had him one time. I think it was in some training trip. He went everywhere with us. He went on every training trip pretty much. I think this is in Portland, maybe. So we were just taking him outside the hotel. He just fed him. 15 minutes later, he has a schedule. We take him out, let him do his business. He'd like to poop in the bushes. So he goes head first into the bushes, and he turns around, and we're walking through the field, and he hits the bushes. He just turns right around, and he starts pooping, and I hear this homeless guy in the bushes like, ah! I guess there was somebody sleeping in there, so that was a pretty funny one. I'm glad nothing else happened.
Yeah.
But that was a good one. I got all kinds of good Cairo stories.
I can't imagine. So in your book, No Ordinary Dog, how did that take place? Why did you want to do this book? And I imagine it was to honor Cairo, obviously, but what was the story you wanted to set straight?
As soon as the mission was accomplished, Cairo's name was released, and then started seeing things that just weren't completely accurate. And maybe some people claiming to have him. It's a piece of history. I read SEAL books before joining the Navy. This is Cairo really was a good job. We were fortunate enough to be a big part of history. I wrote the book just for Cairo. It tells Cairo's story, tells the truth, brings attention to what these amazing working dogs can do. Not just military, but police and any service dog, any service animal. Like, just animals are great. And the foundations that support the working dogs, you know, Spike's Canine Fund and Ritland's, he's got a great foundation. John Devine. Yeah. So it brings attention to those people. And then I just tell a little bit about my personal story as well. Because, you know, we all have issues transitioning usually. And there's a lot of guys that could use a little help maybe. And if telling my story opens their eyes to some different modalities, and like, hey, man, we all kind of deal with some stuff. Or anybody, I guess, period. There's just brings attention to certain modalities. I heard about, just say, intermittent fasting alone. You know, I was told about that by one of my teammates who I highly respected. I didn't try it until, you know, years later when it was phrased to me differently. And it was huge benefit to my health. I dropped 60, 70 pounds.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just hearing it in a different light. So if I can tell some of the things that I've been through, some of the brain treatment stuff, you know, I suffered a grenade injury in 2012. Just all the accumulative blasts over the years, I think, added up. So I get to tell the truth about Cairo. The book is for Cairo. I don't want to talk about myself. I'm nothing compared to some of those guys on my team. Cairo was great. And then bring attention to what they can do, and then tell a little bit about my personal stuff if it helps.
Yeah. Oh, it's, I'm looking forward to getting it. In fact, I was starting to read it today. Before I was chatting with you, and I was like, I just went ahead and downloaded the Kindle just so I could finish it up today. I was planning to spend the rest of the day on it. So looking forward to hearing about the story. So what, I guess most people can find it on Amazon. Is it in bookstores now?
Should be in all bookstores, all outlets online, but Amazon's a good place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
I narrated the audio book.
So okay. Great. Is that available now too?
It is. Yeah.
Okay.
We also have a young adult reader version coming out. So in here soon, hopefully we launch that thing. It's just for teenage kids, kind of the same story, just so they can, not that the book is really violent or stuff, but it takes out all cuss words and kind of gets the point across to children a little bit better.
Oh, that's neat.
Teenagers.
That's
really good. I hope it does well. So we'll launch that soon. We got that in the works, and yeah, everybody seems to be loving the book so far.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I noticed there's great reviews already. So what's next for you, Will?
This is it, man. Just telling Cairo's story. And it's really great to see all the good reviews. It's very important to me. Obviously it took a long time to get this book, done. It's a piece of history. It's for Cairo. It's done well. I'm glad to hear all the great feedback. Now I'm just going to see where I'm needed. You know, just keep working on myself as well. I've got a few issues I'm still going through.
Sure. What have you found in your transition out of the military to be the most helpful for you?
Well, I think I would say reaching out. One of my best friends, Jared Shaw, reached out to me and kind of drug me to one of the brain treatment place, through the Brain Treatment Foundation. Those people are great. So it was for him reaching out, and he said, you know, it was good we swim buddy each other, but just reach out to your friends if you think they might be in a bad place. Because, you know, just because you're in a bad place, I know it's easy to say reach out to your friends, but a lot of guys don't do.
Right.
So there's a lot of good people out there, and there's a lot of great modalities to try, man. There's just listen to podcasts like this, and there's all kinds of diet, float tanks, breathing. You know, there's all kinds of things, meditating, praying.
Yeah. I think, you know, but my recommendation for people was just experiment, you know, try all of them, see which one really works for you. Cause the one's going to click, you know, it may be yoga, maybe meditation, maybe something else, you know.
Give it a good shot.
Yeah.
Try it for a little bit, and then just because that doesn't work doesn't mean try it again later and try it with a different modality. So try two things. Try your breathing while doing yoga. Try, you know, anything while doing, try them together. You got to experiment a little bit and give them a decent shot.
Yeah, I would agree with that. That's a good point.
Yeah. But that's it. Just knowing that there's good modalities out there and there's great people willing to help is very important. You know, there's people that are great people that are willing to help you out.
You mentioned some foundations that, you know, help the working dogs and everything like that. What are there any that you work with regularly?
Not right now. But there's great ones out there. There's really good ones out there. You know, like Johnny Wilson has a great foundation. Mm-hmm. Marcus Luttrell has a great foundation. Those Luttrells are great. There's great foundations out there. Like I said, the Brain Treatment Foundation helped me quite a bit. There's multiple foundations that help me. I don't know where I'm going to be needed most yet, but we're figuring all that out. Until then, I'm just going to focus on the book. And I'm glad everybody's enjoying it.
Yeah. And, my advice is relax, enjoy what's going on, do some interviews, you know, and enjoy it and just keep on growing. You know, you're such a, you know, you're still so young, and I look forward to seeing what's next for Will Chesney. But
you got some big things coming.
Yeah, good. I can imagine you do. I mean, one thing that I've always noticed about seals is they tend to not let the grass grow under them very much. You know, especially when they get out. You know, they're always constantly moving and thinking about something, you know, and so I'm looking forward to seeing that journey again.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Yeah.
It's good to be maybe we can have you on again on your next big project.
Yeah. You know it. You know it, man. That'd definitely make it happen.
All right. So, So a lot of kids that watch this are typically people considering military service, and they just want to see the journey that people make and take out some of that impossibility factor of especially special ops side of the world. Any departing words for the young guy that's thinking going special ops in their future?
Just if that's what you really want, you got to go and do it, but you got to be, I guess the best way to put it to people is like any special forces, not just SEAL, but going through SEAL training, things like, you literally have to be willing to lay down your life for your brother, right? Like Mikey Montour jumped on a hand grenade.
Yeah.
Think about that for 1 second. Like, really? You be willing to do that. So you got to be willing to be at that level, right? And you got to be willing to do that through buds. Like, who cares? It's just pain. If you're legs break along the way, well, that's not your fault. That's just God's plan. But if you give it all you got, cool. Something else is going to come up. Find what you love, go after it. And then I found the best group of guys, like my roommate and buds, Jason Higgins. You had him on here. Go listen to that guy. He's a great guy. I met some of my best friends. And sure, it sucks at times. Who cares? Life sucks sometimes. Figure out what you love to do and it'll be worth the pain, man. Just go do it.
Yeah.
And you'll find some great people along the way. That's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the journey, the journey is worth it.
Oh yeah, man. And just enjoy it while you're in it. Even if it sucks, that's why we should go back and just, hey man, live in the moment. Like, enjoy it. I went from a trailer park to Coronado, California. Sure, I was in a little bit of pain, but think about all the cool stuff we got to do.
Hey man, you live on the beach for a year.
On the beach. It was awesome. Literally, that's one of the things I think about. I remember walking out of the barracks, whatever, 618 or not the main ones, the other ones on the compound, the little tiny guys. And I remember walking out one of my first times and just hitting that ocean air, hitting me in the face. And I'm like, I am at Bud's on the beach. I don't have any worries.
Beachfront property.
Beachfront property. All I'm going to do is like just make it through some pain tomorrow. And I get to have fun with my friends in the meantime. And it's just a bunch of grab ass. So you make the best friends, you know, to get through the pain, it's all jokes. So you
it is
serious for a minute and suck it up. And then it's just jokes.
It's fun. Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, thank you so much guys, everybody listening, you got to get that No Ordinary Dog, a great book about Cairo. That is on my to-do list today to finish reading that entire book. So I'm looking forward to just taking the day off and I'm going to read your book.
Yeah.
All right, Will. Hey, thank you so much for your time. I'm really honored that you would be on this, this is a small time podcast, you know, so I appreciate you taking time to be on it. Really flattered that you would willing to take an hour to be on. So thank you so much.
Another team guy, friend of mine. Yeah, buddy. Of course. Anything. Yeah. Glad you could have me.
Thank you, man. Hey, good luck. Good luck with everything. And let's keep in touch.
Definitely. Reach out anytime. You got my number now. So all right. I should have sent that to you a while back. But yeah, keep in touch.
All right, man. Thank you so much.
Right. Later, bud.
We'll see you.